Hello, and welcome to the Journal of American History podcast. Thanks for joining us today. I'm your host, Marina Meekham, editorial assistant for the Journal of American History and PhD candidate in history at Indiana University. In today's blogcast episode, we're taking a look at Cristina Barriano's article, Huajuan and the Chamorro People, first published in Process, a blog for American history, on October 31st, 2023.
Once in a while, the U.S. territory of Huajuan, or Guam, appears in mainstream media such as the New York Times, generally when catastrophic or near-catastrophic events involve the island, most recently as Typhoon Marwar and its 140-mile-per-hour winds that passed directly over the island in May 2023. Though news reporters came for the storm, there are articles critically focused on the U.S. military presence on the island instead. Strikingly, they saw that most Americans, including themselves, did not know about this far-flung, unincorporated territory of Huajuan and its indigenous Chamorro people. Approximately 200 square miles, Huajuan is the southernmost island of the Marianas Archipelago that spans north to south along the 144-degree east longitude line in the western Pacific Ocean. The island's diverse population is roughly 160,000 people, with the Chamorro population accounting for about a third of the island's residents, while the majority of the others have heritage from the Philippines and other Pacific islands. As the proverbial tip of the spear of U.S. power in the Asia-Pacific region, Huajuan contains several military installations for the U.S. Navy, Air Force, and Army. Currently, construction and infrastructure work has ramped up in order to relocate and house several thousand Marines and their dependents from U.S. military installations in Japan back into American territory in Huajuan. Thus, as U.S. historians, if we are to study and teach the history of a global American power, the history of Huajuan from the perspective of Chamorro and Huajuan-based scholars is essential. Grand narratives of an American republic democracy sit uneasily when one does not have representation in Congress, cannot vote for president, and sees disparities of opportunity and wealth when compared to stateside American citizens. In addition, as the continued U.S. militarization of Huajuan is prioritized over the welfare of local residents, the irony of freedom and democracy becomes ever more apparent. The historiography of the island has seen a transition in recent decades. While earlier works were geared towards the shortcomings of a U.S. benevolent empire, as seen in historical lapses in integration, citizenship, and assimilation, the more recent historiography falls into a decidedly critical and activist vein, skeptical of American presence and exposing the harm that U.S. presence has had on the land, environment, and Chamorro life and culture in Huajuan. In particular, Chamorro and other Huajuan-based scholars, including myself, provide a unique vantage point from which to study U.S. imperial history, guided by our own personal experiences living and working in a U.S. colony. We refute the relegation of Huajuan to a footnote of history, and instead show how the relationships between Chamorros and the U.S. military, other migrants, and the environment provides all of us with critical perspectives on U.S. imperialism, and how colonial subjects have negotiated and resisted colonial impositions. For us, history does not just exist in the ivory tower. We show how the politics of writing history is inextricable from the moments and movements that shape us. First of all, histories of Huajuan require a keen understanding of Chamorro indigenous relationship to the Marianas Archipelago. The Chamorro people trace their origins to Puntan and Fauna, a pair of siblings whose bodies created the earth and the universe and gave rise to the Chamorro people. These ancestors' bodies gave rise to Huajuan. The Marianas Archipelago, of which Huajuan is a part, is home to the Chamorro and Wafalawash people who first inhabited the islands 4,000 years ago. In 1565, Ferdinand Magellan encountered Huajuan while lost in the Pacific Ocean and then claimed the island for Spain. Spain colonized the Marianas for over 300 years until the Treaty of Paris in the aftermath of the Spanish-American War in 1898, when Huajuan became a U.S. colony. Huajuan's 20th and 21st century history demonstrates the multitude of ways that U.S. imperialism, militarism, and state building intersects and impacts indigenous Pacific Islanders every day. No matter the historiographical generation, Chamorro and Guahan-based scholars have agreed that U.S. military strategy has come to define the island's colonial administration. It was a coaling station in 1898, a pivotal island in the U.S. island hopping strategy during World War II, a launch pad for airplanes departing for Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War, and now it serves as the most forward base of U.S. military strategy against China in the Asia-Pacific region. Due to Guahan's military necessity to the U.S., many scholars agree that the lives and futures of the Chamorro people and its island residents have been largely in the hands of military and federal officials in Washington, D.C., and thus a pawn in the potential front lines of war. Chamorro and Guahan-based scholars have complicated the one-sided narrative of an American benevolent empire, emphasizing Chamorro agency in their interactions with the U.S. military. In the first few decades of the 20th century, the U.S. Navy directly governed Guahan, a prime example of how the U.S. military can act as a colonial bureaucracy. During that time, the President of the United States appointed a naval captain every 1 to 3 years to oversee the island's population, instituting political and social regulations while building military and civilian infrastructure upon pre-existing Spanish colonial establishments. As shown in Robert Underwood's work, American Education and the Culturation of Chamorros of Guahan, the Navy has limited success in Americanizing the Chamorro people through an American education system and by instituting anti-Chamorro laws such as banning the Chamorro language and religious holidays. Yet, Chamorros continue to speak Chamorro and practice their culture. They also extended their historical agency by leading political movements and resisting other colonial policies. Penelope Bordalio Hofschneider, for example, examines how Chamorro leaders use their legal acumen to advocate for political rights vis-a-vis a colonial government. In their respective books, Anne Hattori and Christine Titano-Delisle show how U.S. naval officials and their wives taught Chamorro people Western medical practices and attempted to snuff out Chamorro healing traditions. Others, such as Elisa Santos and James Viernes, illuminate how Chamorros enacted everyday forms of resistance against naval regulations on farms and in military exercises. Historically, World War II was a watershed moment for Guahan and the Chamorro people. The United States had surrendered its colony quickly to Japanese forces, evacuating its military personnel days before the Japanese military attacked the island on December 8, 1941. Guahan then fell swiftly into a brutal 32 months of Japanese occupation. After its recapture in 1944, the island became a crucial hub for the U.S. military island-hopping strategy, transforming from a sleepy coaling station into a bastion of U.S. military presence in the Pacific. Military installations pervaded the island as the United States built new infrastructure, marking a new age of American modernization in Guahan. Meanwhile, arguing that their loyalty during World War II proved their Americanness, Chamorros vied for U.S. citizenship in the late 1940s, believing that citizenship would afford them political rights and a voice for their island's affairs. In 1950, President Truman signed the Organic Act of Guam, which provided U.S. citizenship to Chamorros and then transferred the colonial administration of Guahan from the U.S. Navy to the U.S. Department of the Interior. A civilian government was established, and Chamorros found some semblance of democracy with the ability to create and enforce laws for their own island. Early histories of Guahan, published in the decades after World War II, such as Paul Corano and Pedro Sanchez's A History of Guam, skewed positively toward the U.S. presidents and the island. White and Chamorro historians alike saw American empire as a better alternative to the traumatic experience of Japanese occupation, and viewed U.S.-driven modernization and the establishment of American citizenship as positive developments. Yet, scholars such as Anne Hattori, Alfred Pareto Flores, and myself have complicated these earlier evaluations of U.S. presence by showing that U.S. citizenship did not actually provide Chamorros the voice they had hoped for in their island's affairs, a twist to American historians' assumptions that U.S. citizenship is unequivocally and always a good thing. Wartime land annexation and post-war militarization led to the dispossession of Chamorro ancestral and family lands and subsequently mandatory relocations. Having limited access to land for subsistence, Chamorros were forced to rely on a newly minted cash economy controlled predominantly by the U.S. military. The military also imported thousands of workers from the Philippines for infrastructural projects, some of whom stayed and established a substantial immigrant population that grew to challenge Chamorro population numbers by the 1970s. Thus, U.S. militarism made settler colonialism a permanent state of existence on the island. Chamorro discontent with U.S. colonialism brewed in the 1970s into political movements that used the Charter of the United Nations to push for a self-determination plebiscite. According to the UN, Guam residents should be able to decide, in a plebiscite that has yet to be scheduled, whether the island becomes an independent nation, a nation in free association with the U.S., or fully integrated into the U.S. as a state. Chamorro activist groups such as the Organization of People for Indigenous Rights, or OPIR, critiqued the U.S. before a local, national, and international audience, demonstrating the connection between U.S. militarism and colonialism, and arguing that that the indigenous people of Guam should decide the island's future. Significantly, Chamorro activists saw the power of historical narratives in shaping colonial policy, and sought to rewrite history to emphasize Chamorro agency and viewpoints. For instance, in the 1990s, the government of Guam and the Department of Education published the Haleta series to be used in Guam's public schools. Featuring books subtitled with the phrase, From the Chamorro Perspective, the series covered topics that included the self-determination movements such as the Guam Commonwealth Movement that, at the time, would neither make mainstream histories nor be taken seriously by stateside academics. As a result, Chamorro scholar activists from this era of protests not only undeniably shaped subsequent indigenous Chamorro movements, but also planted the seed of a revisionist historiography that is rooted in a community-based, anti-colonial praxis of telling history. Many Chamorro and Guam-based scholars today, including myself, come from this activist genealogy, using our access to intellectual circuits and opportunities to re-narrate the past and re-envision alternative presents and futures for Guam. We employ interdisciplinary methods from ethnic studies, Pacific Indigenous studies, and gender studies to account for the multitude of ways that history is expressed on the island. We are deeply involved with Guam, participating in community organization, recording oral histories, writing histories for general audiences, conveying history through literature, and even creating amazing YouTube videos. Most notably, the organization Independent Guam records podcasts, holds teach-ins, organizes rallies and protests, and participates in direct action to advocate for self-determination rooted in Chamorro history in Guam. As scholar activists, Chamorro and Guam-based scholars show the power of historical narratives in shaping how we view ourselves and Guam's relationship to the world. As of 2023, in 2024, Guam has yet to vote for self-determination, demonstrating that the age of U.S. colonialism is alive and well. Yet we can listen, read, and incorporate Chamorro and Guam-based scholars into our scholarship and classes on U.S. history to more fully grapple with the potent impact of U.S. imperialism, and also how Chamorro people continue to resist it.
Kristen Oberiano is an assistant professor of history at Wesleyan University, where she researches and teaches about U.S. imperialism. Kristen is a third-generation Filipino born and raised on Guam and currently serves as a board member for Guam Sustainable Culture 501c3, a nonprofit organization dedicated to food sovereignty and environmental sustainability on Guam. Music for this blogcast episode features King Oliver's Creole Jazz Band's 1923 recording of Mabel's Dream. King Oliver's Creole Jazz Band was one of the first Black American jazz ensembles to receive a recording contract from Paramount Records. In its early years, the band featured Joe Oliver, Louis Armstrong, Johnny Dodds, Honor Daughtry, Lily Armstrong, Johnny St. Cyr, and Babe Dodds. Thanks for tuning in to the Journal of American History podcast. Follow us on social media to hear about upcoming full-length podcast episodes and more bite-sized blogcast episodes like this.